morning, everyone. This is Martin Zender, broadcasting from my studio in Las Vegas, Nevada, also known as Hannah's Room. Yeah, that's right. That's right. The word goes forth with power here through the generosity of Hannah Newman, who actually gave up her room and is sleeping in her brother's room. And her brother's actually in it, right? I think so. She's doing this so that not only would I have a pleasant room in which to sleep, a room with lime green walls, pink pillows, hair dryers, curling irons, and I got a lamp over here with feathers on it. Go to my blog, you'll see a picture of it. And I'm actually broadcasting right now atop of Hannah's makeup table. So thank you, Hannah Newman. Oh, folks, go to my blog, martinzender.com. Click on Zenderville, and you can see what's been going on here in Las Vegas. We're having a great few days of fellowship here. And it's amazing, really, to see how members of the body of Christ are really can be closer than family members. You meet these people that you've never met before, you hug them, and it's like you've known each other for your whole lives, and bang, you hit the ground running, start talking about the great things of God. And I'm like 2 miles from the Strip right now, and I don't even care. And nobody else here cares either. We're still introducing 2 Timothy. I know 2 Timothy is written to the saints, to us. Well, it was written to Timothy, but by extension, it's written to us. What do we do? How do we live in an era of apostasy when things are so backwards, when the truth is spoken of as evil and evil is spoken of as the truth? How do you handle it? Yeah, I really need to define the word apostasy for you before we get going too far here. The Greek word is anastasia. No, that's not a Disney movie. It means from standing. Those are the Greek elements, ana, from, and stasia, to stand. This is something that infects the church. It can't apply to the world because the world never was standing. But there was a time when the church was standing. For instance, when Paul wrote 1 Timothy, Paul established these ecclesias. And it came to be that the ecclesias became infected by people sneaking in and spying on their freedom, taking away their freedom by injecting foreign elements into grace, namely the law. All kinds of works and religious pride. It became a fact that, oh, I'm chosen and you're not. Well, that's not the spirit of God, and it engenders pride, it engenders exclusivity, and the church soon becomes a popularity club, and it excludes the rest of the world. Well, there is a such thing as believers being separate from the rest of the world, but in the Christian circles, the infected church, those unbelievers are separated for eternity. Eternity. They not only die for eternity, they're tormented for eternity. That's the apostasy. It infects the church. The world cannot apostatize. The church started out right, but by the time Paul writes 2 Timothy, it's no good anymore, and now we have the scriptures. All right, Acts chapter 20, verse 30. It was talking about people speaking perverse things. That's how this whole thing started. Not by people murdering people, as bad as that is, but by speaking perverse things about God, by falsifying the truth. Remember, we said that word had to do with turning people away, and Paul uses the word perverse there. Verse 30 of Acts 20, I'm aware that after I'm out of reach, burdensome wolves will be entering among you, not sparing the flocklet, and from among yourselves will arise men speaking perverse things. I gave you the context. That word is also used in Acts chapter 13, verse 8. You remember Paul is with Barnabas on the island of Cyprus, and Bar-Jesus, also termed Elymas, sought to pervert, quote, seeking to pervert the proconsul from the faith. We so assume perversion to be associated with a sexual context. Not true. What did Elymas do? Hand Sergius Paulus a condom? No. It had nothing to do with sexuality. It had to do with religion. It has to do with works. It has to do with trying to convince someone that they're not worthy, that they have to earn their way to God. Here's a perverted saying, turn or burn. That's perverse, and people who say that to you are perverted. Believe or die for eternity. This is your one and only chance to be saved. That is perverse, and the people saying these things are perverts. This is far worse than any sexual connotation you can come up with. All right, as you know, we're still introducing it, but we're going into Clyde Pilkington's book, The Church in Ruins, a study of 2 Timothy. And right now, I want to quote from Clyde Pilkington's book, Due Benevolence. We're going to look at some things God hates. I think you're going to be very surprised at what God hates. He's very specific about it. You would think that God hates everything to do with sex, because again, that's the connotation we always put on perversion. But in 2 Timothy, we're looking at religious perversion. This is far more prevalent and far more damaging than any kind of so-called sexual perversion. God has plenty of opportunities to tell you how much he hates sex, and yet he gives us a list of the things he hates in Proverbs 6:16-19. Let me quote Proverbs 6:16-19. These six things does the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination to him. I don't know why he didn't say seven in the first place. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that are swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaks lies, and he who sows discord among the brothers. Did you notice anything interesting about this list? Is there something strikingly absent here? Yeah, there's not a sexual thing mentioned in the bunch. In fact, a lot of this in here, as I'm going to take these things one at a time, are moralistic failures that you find in religious circles, not in strip clubs, religious circles. For instance, you know, a proud look, sowing discord among the brothers. God hates more than anything the religious pride that says, I accomplish what only God can accomplish, usurping God's sufficiency for one's own. That's what the Lord hates. A proud look. That's the first thing. Looking down your nose at someone else. Pride. Oh my gosh, what's the word that comes to mind when you think of the Pharisees? The first word you think of is pride. They were so proud. We believe as in you'll not. I doubt they talk like that, but let's go to modern day proud people. We accepted Jesus Christ. All you have to do is accept him and you will be saved. If you don't, you will burn for eternity. Of course, our salvation is nothing of ourselves. It's all of God. Oh, BS. It's not all of God when that's your attitude. People try to contain the pride, but they just can't. It oozes out their pores and comes down the slope of their nose when they're looking at you and really, you know, blaming you. You just can tell. You can tell they're blaming you for not believing in Jesus. You're too stupid. They were wise. That's proud. It's a proud look. Even if they don't talk it, they look it. I mean, just look at people coming out of church. Their nose is in the air. You rabble. Everybody that doesn't go to church is rabble. Well, they don't go to church. I wonder why so-and-so is so bad. Well, he doesn't go to church. That's the proud look. God hates that. A lying tongue. A lying tongue. You have to go to church or else. Telling lies about God. Telling lies about his character. Telling lies about his will. That he intends to save all, but he can't do it. This is a lie. And people don't seem to care to check up on what the Bible has to say. They just believe what they're told and they pass it on. They may not be intending to lie, but the result is the same. A lying tongue. Hands that shed innocent blood. Number three. Boy, I think of the Crusaders here. Hands that shed innocent blood. More blood has been spilled in the name of religion than in anything else. Religion kills. In fact, religion is the best cloak evil ever had. There's obvious evil, and then there's religious evil. And people who think they have God on their side, oh man, there's no stopping them. Look at we're not just talking about Christian evil. Christians have killed enough people. Look at Islam, militant Islam. That's religious evil. It's killing in the name of God, in the name of their God. Hands that shed innocent blood. God hates that. Number four, heart that devises wicked imaginations. What is more wicked of an imagination than the fictitious cauldrons of hell, the various rooms that are supposed to be waiting for the people who don't go to church, where Satan thinks of more ingenious ways to torture them? Yes, taking from Dante, from Dante's Inferno, taking from fictitious sources and incorporating these sources into the divine record, as though they're in the divine record, but incorporating them through word of mouth, through fables passed down, and people assume that this is in the Bible. It's not. It's wicked imaginations. Humans have such wicked imaginations of how they want other people to die and how they want other people to suffer. And man, you find this in literature, but to import it into scripture where it's not is not only lying, but it's a heart that devises wicked imaginations. And as Paul says in 2 Timothy, people will heap up for themselves teachers who teach this crap just so the religious people can feel good. And you know, some people actually say that we're going to look on with satisfaction in heaven at those souls in hell burning. And it's going to give us some kind of sickly satisfaction. 5. Feet swift in running to mischief. This is, in the context, religious mischief, meddling in people's lives. It doesn't have to be religious mischief. It's meddling. It's causing problems for other people. It's like the circumcisionists did. They meddled. They came into Paul's group, these people who are founded on grace, and they meddled. Their feet were swift to run in when Paul left and to create mischief, to create worry where there was no worry, to create sin where people were living in the freedom of Christ, to get people to be sin consciousness again. I've had people that, you know, I've taught them the truth. Maybe they've read my book, How to Be Free from Sin While Smoking a Cigarette. They're delivered. And then these people swift in running to mischief, they want to screw it all up. Zender told you not to worry? How could he say that? Well, I don't know. He said it was Philippians 4:6. Paul says, don't worry about anything. Ah, don't believe Zender. Swift to make mischief. I know people who are talking to your kids when you're not around. You're trying to teach your kids the truth? People are sneaking in and trying to talk your kids out of the truth. That's mischief. A false witness that speaks lies. Satan's strategy to discredit God's messengers today are to spread false witnesses and speaking lies about people. People don't check up on anything nowadays. They hear a rumor, they hear some kind of innuendo, and they take it to be truth. False witness. God hates false witness. In fact, in the law, if you brought false witness against someone to condemn that person, and that person was found innocent, and you purposely bore false witness, you would suffer the penalty that would have been meted out to that person had the witness been true. That's how much God hates false witness. Jesus suffered false witness. They said that he said, tear down this temple and I'll rebuild it in 3 days. They thought he meant the temple standing in Jerusalem, that he was going to tear it down. No, he meant the temple of his body. But the false witness was passed on. And Paul suffered the same thing. The Jews, when Paul was in Jerusalem, the Jews thought that Paul had brought Titus into the sanctuary, and the rumor got spread that he did. Paul would never have done anything that stupid, but they were ready to tear the guy limb from limb because they thought he did. False witness. God hates that. He hates it because it's lies. Number 7, the last point. Those who sow discord among brethren. These are one of the things God hates in accord with Proverbs 6, verses 16 through 19. He hates someone who sows discord among the brethren, makes it happen. I mean, discord does come through our natural, you know, interaction with each other, but we're talking about people who sow it, who purposely bring it on to cause trouble. And again, there's not a sexual sin, there's not a sexual coloring or slant in the bunch. In fact, much of it is moralistic, religious-type thinking, religious-type condemnation, religious-type guilt that infects the church. This is what we're looking at in 2 Timothy. I can't wait to keep digging into this with you. Again, go to my blog, martinzender.com. Click into Zenderville to see what's happening here in Las Vegas. Thanks for tuning in from Hannah's room. I'll be with you here again tomorrow. Please tune in.